Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. I am Seth Merrow. This is Racing Across America. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning. Another fun Saturday. A little bit later on, we will be joined by Dave Rodman down at Laurel. They have a nice stakes day highlighted by the Tessio, which typically produces some Preakness runners. I don't think this year will be any exception. Also, I mentioned earlier our friend Andrew Dembski, who you might remember for a long time he was down in the paddock at Tampa, but now he's shifted over to the harness side of the game. He actually calls some races, but he does some work handicapping and whatnot over at the Meadowlands. But he went down and put together a really nice kind of tribute, the closing of Pompano, put together a piece talking to a lot of the drivers and the major players down there as Pompano tomorrow night will close their doors forever. So we're going to look at that piece as well this morning. But we're going to start things out. Hey, it's spring at Keeneland. That means another big Saturday of stakes action. And after last week talking to Ellis Starr and him handing out some nice winners last week, I thought we'd A, get a little recap on maybe some of last week's action, but B, take a look at some of today's action as well with Ellis. Ellis, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good morning, racing fans.
Happy to have you on board to talk a little Keeneland before we get into some of the specifics. Update us on the weather, because obviously opening weekend was a little bit dicey, but it seemed like yesterday I was watching, looked like a nice spring day down in Kentucky.
Yeah, last week, you know, when I was on, I kind of turned my computer so you could all see the snowstorm that came through for a half an hour, and it's been amazing. The track superintendent's done a phenomenal job. Yesterday was sunny, partly cloudy, mostly today partly cloudy, mid-60s. The dirt will be fast. The turf's still probably good because there's moisture in it. I think they're down to about 35%, but it's playing very fair. It's going to be a great day of racing.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. And before I get to last weekend and some thoughts on some of the prep races and whatnot, I just wanted to pull up the stretch run because I mentioned it on the handicapping show earlier. What were your thoughts? Keeneland in springtime, it's like Saratoga in the summertime. You get some of these midweek nice stakes races. You had a Friday afternoon grade one yesterday in the Maker's Mark Mile, and what a great race it was. We have the stretch run here. Mason coming in for Chad Brown from Europe, the number four horse, is going to take the lead under Flavian Pratt and look to potentially be the winner. But Cheryl Spite comes late, and it is a ding-dong on the wire with Cheryl Spite getting up by a nose, Mason and neck over smooth like straight. And as I say, this was one heck of a horse race yesterday. Your thoughts on the Maker's Mark Mile?
Well, I will say, first of all, my first few days on my Keeneland website pick have been phenomenal. Yesterday was this race, and I was about as far off as you could be because I thought Mason might need a race. The horse is smooth like straight. I thought we'd have the lead. The other horses didn't come, but Cheryl Spite ran a huge race. There's a lot of talk on Twitter about the morning line. I think it was just a typo, probably. It wasn't 50. It should have been 15, probably, and somebody put a zero in there. But absolutely just fantastic. Charlie Fipke, homebred, of course, tremendous breeding in Roger Atfield. And as Keeneland is to say, this is about the turf course playing fair. Every horse, no matter where you are in a race at Keeneland, unless you've got a rocket ship like Golden Rock, Golden Pal in front of you, this is what happens almost every turf race at Keeneland.
Yeah, it was just a lot of fun to watch. It was a lot of fun to watch the replay. And right after the race, as normal, the commentators come on, Gabby, and you could hear the crowd in the background reacting to the replay because you couldn't ask for more for a grade one. And I wanted to show that stretch run because I talked about it, on the handicapping show. But let's get back to last week. And again, gave out some good info last week on some of the stakes action. You mentioned Golden Pal. I did the recap show on Sunday, and I first went through the Keeneland races, and I said Golden Pal may have been the most impressive on the weekend. I had to revise that a little bit. As I got to the Aqueduct races, I said, yeah, maybe it was Speaker's Corner. But Golden Pal was very impressive last week. You talked about and gave out Just One Time, a nice stakes winner, but also you gave out Zandon. So I'd love your thoughts on Zandon and maybe the other two three-year-old prep races, Mo Donegal in New York and Taba in California, who might have been the most impressive of the three, but with the two starts under the belt, it's going to be awfully hard to pull the trigger in the Kentucky Derby. Your thoughts on last weekend?
Well, I do agree. You know, I mean, this is the third start. And what's interesting now, when I look at the races in Messier and Teva, I like Messier better if I had to compare those two. Because Messier ran February 6th and April 9th. Teva ran March 5th and April 9th. And Messier missed a month. I mean, I like in the spring of three-year-olds, I think they need to run in February, March, and April. And he missed it. So in terms of who improves, and Messier is a bigger horse. He was much bigger than Teva. I like Messier better of those. Mo Donegal ran well. I'm not sure about that style. Coming from last in 20 horses, you know how tough it is. And Zandon, he was just impressive. I mean, he got in a little bit of trouble, but it really wasn't that bad. But the most impressive thing about Zandon was the fact that you can see here he's in the white cap, I believe, coming off the rail. Right now he's going to bump a little bit. He's fourth. From the eighth pole on, I mean, he just stretched out his stride. And when you think about the extra eighth at Churchill with that 1,234-foot stretch, he's going to love it. I mean, he's going to love that ground because he just accelerates and continues to not grind, but just get better or has his late move like that. So in terms of the three preps, I was most impressed by Zandon. He also happened to get the best Echo Bay speed figure, 107. If all the three-year-olds this year, Messier also got a 107 back in the Lewis, and then he got a 99 in the San Diego Derby, and so he should move back up to that level. Of course, it's way too early to make, you know, selections for me until we see the draw and everything else, but Zandon was very impressive in terms of thinking about how he's going to love that longer stretch of Churchill Downs.
Yeah, and I saw on Twitter late Saturday or Sunday, Marty McGee put out kind of what his updated morning line would be. He had Zandon over Epicenter. I was a little surprised by that, but Zandon clearly impressed a lot of people.
Well, the future wager closed with Epicenter at 9-2, and there also was a lot of buzz on Twitter about Teva being the favorite, and I basically told people, no way. I'll be so surprised if Teva is the favorite. Doesn't matter that it used to be a Baffert. Doesn't matter how impressive it was. The figure was okay. They're not going to take a horse that's undefeated in three starts. That's not Justify over Epicenter, who's won three in a row, over Cyberknife, over Zandon for sure. I mean, Teva might be the third choice, but he's not going to be the favorite. Epicenter is going to be interesting because, again, the public does weight towards all those wins. But Zandon's going to get a lot of buzz. It's going to be very interesting to see which one of those two is favored come, you know, post-time of the Derby.
Yeah, I think we have a fun weekend shaping up, not just the boys, but the three-year-old fillies have been fabulous so far this year as well, including the win by Nest at Keeneland last week. All right, let's take a look at some of the stakes action this afternoon because, again, spring meet means a lot of great stakes at Keeneland. We'll kick things off in the Giants Causeway for turf sprinters. I pulled up the Mardi Gras from the fairgrounds back in March. We're going to look at the number 4, LZ, winning. Number 5, Change of Control, runs third. And in between them, number 8, Going Good. And they're all back on Saturday afternoon in the Giants Causeway. I think I'm going to tilt towards LZ. But again, coming out of this race, I think you could make a case for any of the three of these, perhaps. What are your thoughts in the Giants Causeway?
I'm not going to try and diminish your pick, Seth, because you're a good handicapper, but I have no interest in LZ. One of the things that I saw about LZ is very interesting is every time she's off Lasix, she does not run her race. Fourth, second, ninth, sixth, those off Lasix races were just not
that's
great.
A good point, actually.
She is lone speed. Perhaps Headline Hunter might go inside of her. Not a lot of other speed, and speed's doing very well. Speaking of speed, yesterday at Golden Pal, Wesley Ward had another one yesterday in the other stake called Ruthen, who got the lead with Johnny V at 8-1, beat his heavy favorite or heavier favorite in that race. They've also got Campanelle here in this race. I think last year's, Change of Control won this race last year. Campanelle wasn't in it. Change of Control's coming into the race pretty much the same. Last year came off a off-turf allowance at Fairgrounds. Third start of the year this year off a second to LZ, and last time in the Mardi Gras to LZ, who I don't think is going to have an easy lead or just won't have it today. And Change of Control, two wins in a second and four races to Keeneland, four to a morning line, fantastic. Campanelle's bet harder because the Ward factor, because, I mean, just unbelievable. The record early as a two-year-old going to Ascot, second start, winning the Queen Mary, winning the Prix Mornay at France, then trying a mile, which is probably a little too far, coming back at Ascot, moved up to first in the Commonwealth last June, and then third in the Franklin County last year, which is when my change of control again. So it's these two, but I have a number of long shots, and I can't remember which one of my blogs on, but people that follow me at Uber Capper can figure out which ones. I have a bunch of long shots that I'm going to use in the exotics, and I'll give them out real quick. 14 AG Indy, and there's going to be 14 running here. There's 15, one also eligible. They run a lot on the turf here. AG Indy coming off a big race in California, one before last to win a grade three, or what used to be a grade three, the Ken Matty, now it's not graded. The 13 Ambassador Luna, who really was second last year at 60-1 to change of control in the fall in the Buffalo Trace, comes in the race off a win. I mean, there's no knocking this horse, and she's 20. The 10 Ghosting Kim for Nacho Correas, Ignacio Correas, coming off a win, also has a nice race at Keeneland on the turf previously, two nice races. And then one more long shot. Oh, 9 Headline Hunter. Umberto Rispoli is now coming to Kentucky on his way to New York. And another horse, first, third, second, first, fifth. The fifth was the only time she ran on dirt. Everything else in all weather or turf was bang up. So I'm going to keep Campanella and Ghosting and Change of Control on top, Windmill on Change of Control, and play exotics with all those other nice price horses in second and third.
Yeah, I'm with you on Headline Hunter. I think Headline Hunter is very interesting in there. All right, we move on to the Lexington, and this one has the potential to play into the Derby with some points up for grabs. I'm going to pull up a replay here of the Fountain of Youth, and I mentioned earlier on the handicapping show a horse that I think may sneak away and be a little bit of value, and I'm going to take a look at in the Derby, is Simplification. So Simplification winning the Fountain of Youth, and number four, In Due Time, running second. I think that I like Simplification. In Due Time has to get a little respect for me this afternoon at Keeneland. I think We All See It is intriguing at maybe a little bit of a price. Skate to Heaven, Major General, also look intriguing in here. Tawnyport, we're going to see what this one can do a second try on the dirt, because certainly didn't show much on the dirt in the Risen Star down at the fairgrounds. But I think it's a fun, interesting field. Your thoughts in the Lexington?
Lexington is always fun because not only is you get a good field, you get horses thinking about the Preakness, you get those that are on the bubble. So, for example, In Due Time, he's got 20 points. There's 20 to the winner. 40 right now would put him like a six-way tie for 17. It's important. I mean, they could go all out here to win this race and hope to regroup in 3 weeks, which is not impossible to do. The only other horse really with points is Tawnyport, who has 40. The other 20-point horses are Ethereal Road, for those that don't know, and then a couple with 10, but that wouldn't make a difference. Tawnyport, you said, you know, McPeak said he didn't like Risen Star. He didn't like that track. He thinks he'll like Keeneland's Dirt. I don't really agree. Strava's an interesting long shot. But In Due Time is the horse I'm going with. It's just the pattern is perfect. Six furlongs, a mile, 16th, last time out, second, clearly second by a length in the Fountain of Youth. Gets Paco again, gets a good draw inside, could save ground, should well. The other two horses I did use as contenders on one of the blogs I did was We All See It, the three. Luis Saez, very interesting getting on for Eddie Keneally. Coming off a career best effort in fairgrounds at the distance with a 94 figure. In Due Time, by the way, if comparing, is 100 figure than 88 figure. So We All See It actually ran well. Now he's taking Lasix off. He hasn't run without Lasix since early, and those were not good races. But that last race is very good. And then the outside horse, Call Me Midnight, you have to absolutely use this horse. Keith DeSormo, such a top trainer that comes in under the radar so much. The horse, of course, we know, posted the 28-1 upset in the LeCompte off a seventh in the Jockey Club. And then Louisiana Dirty, horse was 9 wide at the quarter pole. I mean, the horse just lost the race by just going horribly wide. Gets the 11 post here, but this is the first finish line at Keeneland. Jimmy Graham can tuck in, save ground, split horses, and not be 9 wide. I think he gets a piece. I'm betting In Due Time to win. I'll look at the odds on We All See It and Call Me Midnight. I'm going to mess around with them. And Exact is on top, and I'll put in Strava in second, and I'll put in Skate to Heaven in second for Deodoro off of Maiden Win, another Alaban, which is really good horses this year, and I'll put in Tawnyport in second.
I like it. All right, let's move on to the Jenny Wiley Grade 1 event, mile and 16th on the turf for the ladies. I pulled up the Pegasus World Cup filly and mare turf. I think Chad Brown has the two horses in here that will take the attention. Regal Glory, the number four, is going to be the winner here, but Shantisara, having come out of a win in the QE2 last October, has a win over the track and also looks interesting. But I pulled up, and you can get Ellis's picks at the Keeneland website and other places, but Ellis also national racing analyst for Equibase, and your Equibase race this week is the Jenny Wiley, and I see you're tilting a little towards the European import, who does have the start in the E.P. Taylor last year, but give us your thoughts in the Jenny Wiley.
Well, first let me talk about, the two Chad Brown. I'm against Shantisara. I listed her, I think, as my third pick in our race of the week, but I'm against her because last year coming on for her U.S. debut when she went February to June, she ran second, only ran so-so in the Boiling Springs. And of course, she did run really well at the end of the year. And Chad Brown is good. He's 25% 6 months or more off a layoff, around 6 months. But she needed one last year. And Regal Glory, I don't think, needs one because she fired from August, October to just missed a blowout in the First Lady, another Brown. And she won the Pegasus off short rest. She loves those short rests, so she should be fine. But I did go with Waliak, if I say it right, because her European form was better than Shantisara's. She ran in better races. She got better time form figures. She ran in two group threes to end the year, actually three group threes and a stake. First, second, first. She ran second to Saffron Beach. It's a really nice horse. She comes to the U.S. She's that highly regarded. She runs in the group grade one E.P. Taylor stakes. She runs fourth. I mean, she's beaten a neck and a length. Didn't run that well, but I think she can really do well here. I think she's going to like the firm ground. She's going to like Umberto Rispoli, who's a great turf jockey. Anybody watching in California knows that. And I said the year in form. And then one thing about the trainer, because that's one reason why she's, I think, 5 or 6 to 1, Eddie Vaughn. Eddie Vaughn is one of the things about Racelands. You can look up all these stats. This is a trainer that's had 50 starters, total 50, Seth, in 5 years. That's all he's had. He had 8 wins in 9 seconds. Pretty competent from low amount of starters. And so Waliak's been working well on the Keeneland grass. She looks ready to go. Her races are better than Shantisara. Whether she can beat Regal Glory, I'm not sure. But at the odds, I'm certainly going to take her.
All right. I like it. Ellis, as always, we appreciate the visit and the thoughts. We wish you good luck this afternoon at Keeneland and beyond. And again, we will check in the future.
Thanks very much. Have a great racing day around the country, everybody.
Appreciate it. Ellis Starr, again, national racing analyst for Equibase. As I say, you can catch his picks on the Keeneland website as well throughout the spring meet and various other spots. Also appreciate the visit by Ellis. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll fire up the Pompano piece. And a little bit later on, nice stakes day coming up at Laurel. And we'll talk to Dave Rodman. Stay tuned.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
The first Saturday in May, that's when it happens. The Kentucky Derby. It's the longest running sporting event in America, and the 148th Run for the Roses is set for Saturday, May 7th. Play with us at Capital OTB, and you too can be in the winner's circle.
I got it. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Again, we're going to pull up now the piece on Pompano. And unfortunately, closing for all time tomorrow night. And again, it's unfortunate they have an incredible card tomorrow, but it's Easter and we can't play it around here, which is unfortunate because I think we'd all love to kind of jump in the action closing night on, again, a really nice card. But one way or the other, do want to kind of tip our cap to Pompano and the closure down there. When we were down Florida Derby week, I went over to Pompano and taped a little piece that we played here, talked to Gabe Pruitt, the announcer, and John Barry, not only the publicity guy down there, but a harness racing veteran. It was fun to talk to those two. They're both featured in this piece along with some of the drivers and trainers down at Pompano. Andrew did a great job. It's put together by Andrew Dembski, who, again, you might remember when he was in the paddock down at Tampa. We used to have him on fairly regularly. Shades, he goes by. And now he's kind of shifted over to the harness game, does some announcing, does some work over at the Meadowlands. But he went down to Pompano and put together, as a video guy, I used to own a video production company, and I appreciated how much work clearly went into this piece. A nice little piece that, again, tips the cap to the finale coming up at Pompano Park, which if you don't remember, I know we have a lot of harness fans out there, and I like the harness game, but if you don't remember, Pompano was, and it referred to in the piece, as the winter capital of harness racing. And, you know, the best of the best would be down there in the winter, top quality racing. And so it's sad to see Pompano go by the wayside. But here it is. Andrew Dembski, again, put together a really nice piece, kind of tribute to the closure of Pompano, which happens tomorrow night with their finale. So here it is, tribute to Pompano Park.
In Broward County, South Florida, Pompano Beach, and we are live.
There they go. They're off and trotting in between horses. Sandy Bowl rushes.
A sizzling opening quarter of 27 1/5 seconds.
Nia Charles now opening up by 8 lengths.
Three deep. Here comes Axe Speedy. Down along the inside, Charlie My Boy, in between horses, MC Vivaldi.
Welcome back, everyone. Saturday evening from South Florida. There they go. They're off and trotting.
A Hall of Fame career that knows no bounds. Hennessy's in for win number 10,000 here with the favorite Prince of Fame.
With hearty welcome on the outside, Thunder's Image, Banker Blue Chip comes on to get the call. Mile in 1:54 2/5.
February the 4th, 1964, that was the soft opening of Pompano Park.
And I think they really struggled the first couple of years, you know, to get enough trainers and owners and horses to come down to compete.
I came down here the first year they opened, and the grandstand was half built. When they built the grandstand, if you stand way back on the apron, you can't see the backstretch. You have to come out of cover, and you could see the backstretch then. Whoever was the designer, they forgot to make the little higher at the back of the under the cover there.
The old grandstand here at Pompano, when I first came, it was just amazing. I was in awe.
They used to be packed every single day. It was packed
wall to wall. You could not walk through it.
If I left the grandstand to walk from the paddock to the grandstand to get to the top floor, it would take 40 minutes because the crowds were so big.
Packed 3,000-4,000 people.
5,000-10,000 people here.
They had around 15,000 people here.
It was 6 floors. Actually, a lot of drivers and trainers. You get done racing, you go upstairs. There was many bars, dining room, beautiful.
I'll tell you one thing. You had to get a reservation to get in there Saturday night, or else you had to be awful good friends with the maitre d'.
My owners had boxes. To get on the 6th floor, you needed a jacket. The 5th floor was the turf club. It was just the 4th floor with the box seats. The place was packed.
It just was the place to be. It was the main attraction in South Florida at that time.
I've had a number of pretty nice horses here and had some success, both at one time a little bit as a driver and, you know, the last 10 years probably as a trainer. I've had a number of really good Florida breds that turned out to be really good horses. One in particular is a mare called Prairie Sweetheart, so I actually set the 2-year-old track record with.
One of my favorite memories is a horse called Falcon Sealstar. I actually drove it in a maiden and won and paid $90. Of course, nobody knew who Falcon Sealstar was then. Even I didn't know. The trainer asked me to qualify. I think I qualified him like a 2-4, nice and relaxed. I got on the race bike a week later, and he says, "You're the best kid." And I looked at him, and I was 45-1, and I drove him like he was the best, and he jogged. And then I never drove Thug and Sealster again. He was sold, and that was the end of the story.
My earliest memory here at Pompano Park is one I'll never, ever forget. I came down here, like I said, in 1986 it was on a whim, I guess. I just wanted to race here one season and see how I would do. But I remember pulling up to the stable gate by myself, and I was terrified to death. I almost turned around and didn't make the journey, but am I ever glad? Am I ever glad I manned up, because that first season was tough, but I had such a ball and such a blast. I said, I got to try it again. And 30 some years later, I'm still here.
Pompano Park used to have a parade of champions, and they took the world champions on 1st of April usually, and they led the post parade with three or four of those that were stable on the other side of the road. And then they'd have a walk of champions, and they had all the trainers, second trainers, drivers, whichever, and they all suited up and they all walked down the home stretch, and I never counted, but there had to be 150, and it was almost the length of the stretch, and that was one of the most impressive things that I'd ever been involved in, and because I was in the parade.
One of my best memories at the time was in 1979. I was driving a horse by the name of Greater Butler. It was probably the biggest race that Pompano ever had at that time. I was just a kid. When I say kid, I was like 20 or so, 21, and I won that race from the 9-hole. They had horses shipping in from all over the country. My horse won, and he paid, I think he was $90-some the one. We upset the odds-on favorite. That was pretty cool.
1989, the Breeders' Crowns were here, and I had a horse named Till We Meet Again, was one of the favorites. And he broke at the start, got away last, and I won the Breeders' Crown.
They're off and pacing on the inside. Right-hand man gets the first call. Till We Meet Again has made a break, but quickly has been brought back of the pace by Mickey McNichol. In the lane, it is Till We Meet Again. Okay, bye. We'll taste his first defeat. On the outside, trying to close in. It's in the pocket and at the rail. Closing Raven Lunatic. Till We Meet Again gets the call.
Definitely was my favorite Pompano Park moment.
We've got equipment that's not been upgraded in forever. You know, it's really taken on a cult status following, and you know, people really get a kick out of some of the things that happen here. We've had both starting gates breaking tonight. We've had multiple power outages. We had a 65-minute total delay just a couple of weeks back. If those type of things happened at any other track, people would be bashing them on social media. We see it all the time. When things like that do happen to the other track, it's almost just a rite of passage here at Pompano.
Command the Fire just won the fifth race. He refuses to leave the track.
We've had a lot of disasters, but it just kind of comes with the territory, you know, just the same way that we've not really upgraded our graphics package. You know, we're still on an analog system, and people just seem to overlook a lot of that with the pomp. It's really part of our unique environment here.
It's a wintertime capital.
The winter capital.
The winter capital.
Absolute winter capital harness racing. That's what this was, and it's, you know, certainly not that now, but it's still pretty cool.
When you have all the attributes of the ocean and the fine weather and fishing and whatever, you golfing, whatever you want to do, Pompano had it all.
When Niatros came here in 1979 or 80, December 27th, it was an unbelievable situation when 18,000 people came here, and they turned away thousands more. You couldn't get within a mile of the place at post time.
This place, in its heyday, was a hangout for a lot of people.
I mean, everybody who was anybody was here.
Stanley Dancerd, Billy Houghton, big stables down here, George Soley, there were all the top stables were down here.
They were the kings of the racing industry here.
It was so much opportunity. If you were willing to put yourself out there, the opportunity was there. Anybody that couldn't make it in Pompano just didn't try hard enough. There was always openings and opportunities here. like I said, it was the best of the best.
And I kind of got here in the mid-80s and it was right at its peak, I believe, then, because we were doing most of our handle on track and we were doing like $750,000 back then.
There was a lot of dignitaries that have come through here at one time or another for the show. It was the show at one time.
I ran into Mickey Mantle drinking one night.
Arnold Palmer was here many times.
Jackie Gleason.
Whitey Ford.
Steinbrenner was here just about every night.
The colorful owner of the New York Yankees, the Yankee boss, George Steinbrenner, and he is behind the Pacer pinstripes.
The thrill of going down the stretch and people shouting and cheering for you, it was something I'll never ever forget.
One of the great things that happened here in the last couple of years, few years, was the addition of the great Gabe Pruitt.
I think the late surge in popularity here at Florida has a lot to do with Gabe Pruitt.
Gabe Pruitt.
When Gabe Pruitt came in, he just really took this place to another level.
He's a great announcer, but he's a heck of a promoter.
Gabe really knows how to pump the numbers.
When he came aboard and to sell our product and tell everybody about the product, he put his heart and his soul into it. And last year it really showed when we had 21 $1 million handle nights.
I think we've done a lot to try and gauge our customers. You can't promote poison, is what I've said many times when it comes to racing. So you have to really work on your product, your wagering menu. We offer a lot of low takeout wagers. We'd like to pride ourselves on being the carryover capital. On the wagering menu, it's any given night you're almost going to see one or two carryovers here, if not more. So we really want to have something to offer the horse players, and I think it's just picked up steam. Over the course of time, because we try to retain the players that we have picked up and always grow right up until the very end.
People love to go to the races, but you know, it's certainly changed now.
It was one of those deals where I believe that we had to go for the off-track wagering and the inner-track wagering.
Lottery started that hurt it.
That's what killed our on-track handle.
Allegedly, we're not going to be racing anymore here, and we all know what that word allegedly means.
It's going to kill me when they close it, but, you know, things change.
And I used to say, if things went bad, I used to say, that's showbiz.
Even though we're closing here, everybody that's here right now is giving everything they got. We're proud people, and we love our industry.
You know, we all knew it was coming. It's inevitable. We got one last season here to say goodbye, so we're thankful for that.
Everybody is coming out in groves just to tell us how much they appreciate Pompano Park and how much they wish we could keep it alive today.
Well, I said I'd be the last man off the ship here because I just love it. It's a beautiful place, such a historic track, and a unique track. Unlike anywhere I've ever worked, it's unlike anywhere I've ever will work. I'll look back at it as the best 9 years of my life, I'm sure.
I'm really going to miss Pompano. It's going to be a sad day for me, closing day.
It's going to be hard to actually see this place gone. It'd be tough to go by there and actually see the grandstand gone and the racetrack gone.
I'm probably going to cry when I close the joint down because I've been here so long, and it's a way of life. I was a king for a while, and it was nice.
I'm just really disappointed and sad to see it going away. It's really a sad thing.
When you can rub elbows on a daily basis with guys like Wally Hennessy and Dave Miller and some of the trainers that have been here forever, you know, Mickey McNichol and Bill Popfinger, just to name a few, Jim McDonald, Mike Dieters, it's a really special place, and it's going to be real sad to see it go.
It's going to be a life change for many of us. A lot of people have planted their entire livelihoods here in South Florida.
Pompano Park's home. It's for me. I knew when I came, the first time I came here and I was on vacation, I knew this is where I wanted to live. And I made it my home since 1980, and I'll make it my home next year when we won't be racing, but I'll still be here.
Well, I've had a home here for 60 years, 50, 60 years, and It's my home base and my home, and I'm going to really miss it when it's closing.
It's going to be a very big hole in the whole harness racing community here.
What I'm going to miss the most here at Pompano is probably the camaraderie and the people that you've known for 20, 30, 40 years.
What I'm going to miss the most is just the people. The people, and I, you know, when I say that, I mean the people out there betting their money that we interact with nightly. The horsemen back here that I see nightly on the track, and the people I work beside that are on the staff here.
There is not one thing. There are probably 10,000 things, and they all make Pompano Park one of the greatest memories that I have enjoyed in my lifetime.
When Pompano closes, I think I'll probably miss the people. I probably won't see a lot of them again. And I'll miss the weather. I'll miss the whole atmosphere of the whole thing. It's been a pleasure being here.
Pompano, I just want to thank you for the last 2 years. It's been absolutely fantastic. Definitely going to miss you. And, you know, hopefully someday down the road we could, you know, have a reunion and we could all get back together and run it back one more time. Thanks for everything.
It's been fun. It's been a great winter hideaway. It's been a fun place.
It was a great place to be, and I'll tell you, I'll really miss it.
I gave everything I had to Pompano Park for 36 years, but I can tell you this, Pompano Park gave me more back.
Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Papa. These two arch rivals head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
And again, thanks to Andrew Dembski, you know, I checked in with him yesterday to make sure we could use his video, and it was a really nice tribute to Pompano Park, which unfortunately closes for good tomorrow, the winter capital of harness racing. But again, he did a nice tribute, so I thought we'd take a couple of minutes to show that. Coming ahead on Saturday afternoon, though, plenty of racing to go on Saturday and beyond for Laurel Park with another nice stakes day. That whole winter schedule, now that we're into the spring, every few weeks there have been some nice stakes, and so we have checked in with the folks at Laurel, including our friend Dave Rodman, and we have him on this morning to talk some of the Saturday stakes. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. Nice sunny day, spring-like weather, fast, and we're on the turf for the first time this year. So,
oh, today's yeah, we've been the off. First day of turf racing?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Nice.
It was supposed to be Thursday, and we were off Thursday and Friday. Thursday there was supposed to be some big storm front that passed through with a lot of rain, and it never really materialized. We had some rain, but not a lot. So And I think they still have precaution. Just take it one more day so we're on the grass here for the first time.
Ah, great. And there is a really nice turf course down there and great turf racing that will continue through the season. And so always good to see, like the robin on the front lawn, turf racing in the Northeast, signifying spring returns. And I was going to ask you about the weather, so it's nice that we have some nice weather down there. I will ask you before, because we've talked about it earlier on the show and on the handicapping show earlier, before we get into the Laurel races, I just wonder if you have any thoughts on the three-year-old prep so far and what you're looking at maybe Kentucky Derby-wise, but last weekend, Mo Donegal, Zandon, and out in California, the very lightly raced Tava, who looked very good. Do you have any Derby thoughts?
I don't think there's a standout, but I don't believe that we're going to see any tremendous upsets either. I mean, of all the preps, maybe I kind of like Mo Donegal a little best of all with his acceleration and ability to sit fairly close to the pace. So I mean, he I don't want to say he would be my pick now, but he's certainly one of the prime players. I'm not really sure. I mean, going into the race, I thought, well, we'll see what Forbidden Kingdom's made of, and that was the end of that story there, right? Maybe a picture become a little bit more clear here in the next couple of weeks as they work toward the Derby.
Yeah, certainly the workouts kind of give thumbs up or thumbs down on some horses. And also, with the 20-horse field, you also, before you really commit, you want to see the post positions.
Yes, exactly. Right. I know a couple of friends of mine who are very high on Epicenter, and his win was certainly impressive at Louisiana. But you know, I keep telling them, you know, let's wait till the post positions are drawn here. You know, somebody could get that inside draw, and we'll see how pace wise how it sets up. I never really like to jump the gun too much and jump on a horse this far out. No, it's not that far out, but at this point.
We all get excited. The Derby and the Triple Crown Trail is so important. We all do. But, yeah, you can't get married too early given post position and workouts and whatnot. But coming up today at Laurel, though, with the Tessio, we maybe have some potential Triple Crown with a Preakness runner or two potentially. We'll get to that in a few, but let's kick things up. Sixth race today at Laurel is the Weber City Miss. Mm-hmm. I pulled up a replay of Beyond the Wire going back to March 19th because the win machine over the past few starts, Lunabelle, got it done pretty convincingly. Lunabelle is going to be the number 7 here in this replay. 4 wins and 7 starts overall at Laurel, and they have been the last 4 starts. So comes in on a good streak. But Chad Brown and Shadwell elect to ship in Kulik, who will run this afternoon, and Chardonnay for Michael Stidham. I thought was a little bit intriguing as well, coming in from Fairgrounds most recently. But does anybody get past Lunabelle this afternoon?
Well, this is a first test at 2 turns, and that's the question. She clearly is the star filly of the day, I think, of all of the stakes races, the horse that everybody wants to see, because she's been so impressive here. She's getting her own little fan club here at Laurel Park and in Maryland, since she is a Maryland bred, and she's been quite impressive and winning 4 stakes for Ham Smith and going way, way back. I say way back, last year at the end of her 2-year-old career, I remember Ham saying, you know, she should have no problem stretching out, the longer the better. I wasn't quite convinced with that comment, but with his thoughts on that, but the way she's run her last couple in the wide country, overcame a lot of trouble in upper stretch, looked like she wasn't going to get there, had to alter course through some traffic, angled out and exploded. And in her last race, where she broke fairly sharp, and Dennis Arujo, a regular rider for the last 4 stakes, put her right on the lead, 24-47-3. So it's good to know she's not a one-run sprinter. The question is, will she be able to handle this 2-turn distance? Obviously, Hammy's always said so. The phone's been ringing off the hook for offers, and she's not for sale. That's what he said, so... they've had quite a few offers on this filly, and I'd like to see her win and make her next step in the Black Eyed Susan Stakes on Friday before Preakness.
Yeah, and the last was at a mile, but of course a mile down there is a one-turn mile, but boy, she passed that successfully, as we just saw with the replay. And you mentioned Ham Smith, the trainer, but also part owner, but also maybe more importantly, one of the part of the breeding team as well. So essentially a homebred for the team, Luda Bell. Always fun to root for those kinds.
Yeah, I guess I'm getting old. I remember calling her Dem, a heavenly moon here at Laurel Park. For the Greens and Ham Smith, and they've done some good work together on the breeding side. They've had quite a few nice horses here that have campaigned a long time in Maryland. So, yeah, she's the interesting horse, hoping for a good break from the gate. She's got a good draw there for the mile of the 16th with a short run into the first turn here at Laurel Park. It's about a 16th of a mile, that's it, before they get to the turn. So if she doesn't break sharp today and she gets squeezed back a little bit, and we'll see what that does to her tactics. I don't know. Man, I'm thinking Chardonnay is probably going to go to the front in here, and she'll just kind of sit and stalk, and they'll make a move with her maybe with about 3 furlongs left to go.
She's going to be a lot of fun to watch, certainly kicking off the stakes action. You mentioned getting old and having called the dam. I remember this was years ago. I was watching the Johnny Carson show. That's how long ago it was. And Dick Van Patten was on, the actor, who was a horse racing fan and was talking some horse racing. And at this time, I was a kid and kind of new to the game. And Dick Van Patten said, yeah, you know, you're getting old when you're a horse racing fan and you look in the daily racing form and you remember the dam, and you remember watching the dam have rate. And I thought then, you know, being young, oh, that's interesting. But now I can look in the racing form, and I'm probably 3 generations deep, and I can remember them running. So yeah, it's we mark time by the racing form and the PPs and the breeding of the various horses we like.
Yeah, there are no scratches in this race at this time in the Weber City Miss, which is good news. So she's not really scaring anybody off here, Luna Bell, that's for sure. At this point, at about 10 minutes ago, the race was all clear with no scratches.
Excellent. There is a scratch in the 7th race, the Frank Whiteley. You mentioned before we went on the air, American Patrol is out in here. I pulled up a replay of the New York Invader. We're going to look at an Aqueduct maiden special for March 5th. Number 7 is going to be Disco Pharaoh. And, boy, this was just such a good-looking maiden special performance. The chart margin is going to be 19 lengths. It's a solid 88 buyer. Gives up experience to others in the field, and there are some nice horses in here. Sir Alfred James, Baracho, youngest of 5, War Talk Toxin off a 97 buyer in the General George. But I thought Disco Pharaoh was one to maybe take a little bit of a look at off this powerful performance. Going to have to validate it this afternoon, but what are your thoughts on the Whiteley?
Yeah, looking at our Laurel Park press releases, some good work there by Phil Janico. You've got the quote from Ray Handel, the American Pharaoh geldings had some foot issues and some problems with the feet conformation-wise. They straightened that out, and up he pops with an 88 buyer number. If he runs that race back, I really want to see what he does in this field, seeing some older, nice seasoned horses this afternoon. I guess the big question is, can he rate come from off the pace? And look like he did on the synthetic at Turfway last year, late in his 3-year-old season there. So perhaps a horse who doesn't have to have the early lead. And Toledo, who Jevy on Toledo, usually always our leading rider here at Laurel Park for many, many seasons. He's kind of jockey that fits this horse, really. He'll take him back if necessary, but not too far back, and judge the pace of the race as it goes. Pace-wise, it looks like Baracho from post 3 from Michael Gorham is going to go to the front. He was super impressive, sprinting 6 furlongs, last out, going the 1-turn mile here at Laurel Park, first off the claim, off of Jamie Ness, which is a tough thing to do. Yeah. His number declined a little bit, but that was the 1-turn mile, and he took some pressure the whole way. He's coming back to 7 furlongs. I did see Michael Gorham yesterday. Says he's doing great coming into the race, and he expects the same kind of performance from him this afternoon. So he's pretty high on the horse, and the Gorham barn's hot. I think they won a race yesterday. I know the day before that they did. Yeah, the last couple of days. So there's a barn that's full of steam right now, the Gorham stable.
And as I say, there are some others in here with some nice stakes experience. The one that jumps out at me, well, War Toxin off that 97 running 2nd in the General George, but youngest of 5 for Hugh McMahon also looks like an interesting player in the Whiteley.
I kind of prefer youngest to five. I don't think he liked being down inside last time out. And the way she told me to go race, he was actually slight favored going six furlongs. Seven ace is more to his liking if you go back to his form, beating the neck by where she told me to go in the Howard and Sandra Bender Memorial back late last year in the fall there. I went back to the charts, tried to see if the rail was dead that day. It was kind of non-conclusive to me. There were some horses that ran on the rail that came back to win, but several horses were 3 and 4 wide. I just think they got away from him early to that 45 and 3. Seven ace more to his liking. War Toxins never won here at Laurel Park from three tries, but got a couple of seconds. His lifetime record, though, you see 8 seconds from 38 tries and 3 wins. But Uriah St. Louis, if there's a race and he thinks he's got a chance, he's in it. And he's going to get a lot of play off that 97 buyer number.
Yeah, a lot of play may be a negative, though. Uriah St. Louis, I think you want 45-1.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said short price on the Uriah St. Louis horse, so maybe worse against you. I think he tends to win when they're like 40, 45-1 or so.
Right, he's 6-1 today. He was 48-1 last time, almost got it done. Almost upset favorite corn maker.
Yeah, if you look down his stakes victories over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, at least a couple of them tend to be very big odds. All right, let's move on to the Heavenly Cause, race number 8. I pulled up Chad Brown's runner, Primacy, and a win back on February 18th at Aqueduct. It was the third in a series of improving buyer numbers. It was a pretty solid win. I thought that made this horse very live this afternoon at Laurel. But, boy, Fee d'Esprit, the number 10 horse this afternoon in the Heavenly Cause, does get stuck outside a little bit, but that performance last time in the stake on March 19th, I think at 7-2 on the morning line, she becomes interesting. And the New York bred Shalimar Gardens for Horacio De Paz, I thought could be intriguing as well. What were your thoughts on the Heavenly Cause?
Well, the class of the race to me is Miss Leslie from the Claudio Gonzalez barn. 7 wins, 5 of them here at Laurel. She likes Laurel. You know, she's won the 38 Go-Go, the Carousel Stakes, back-to-back stakes the last year and the last year. Second, a Battle Bling up in New York. And then last time out was a beaten favorite here at Laurel Park, but she didn't get a great break from the gate that day, and she was caught really where she didn't kind of want to be. She didn't fire. The half mile was kind of, you know, tepid, 47 seconds flat. Now, I think Miss Leslie will run a lot better today on that one-turn mile. She's kind of a confirmed stretch runner, and she, you know, that quarter-mile-plus run home to the second wire will help her. Like Meatloaf said, you took the words right out of my mouth about Fee d'Esprit. That was her most impressive race ever, I thought, restricted Conniver Stakes. She was a gem of a find for a $10,000 claim for Jerry Robb and CJI Phoenix and No Guts, No Glory Farm. I think she is the intriguing horse in this race. The Rob Barn had the hot hand here for several months here at Laurel Park. Kind of cooled off, but then they won a race this week. And so maybe Fee d'Esprit fits the bill here. If she can, I mean, she's not the kind of horse that runs a good number and a bad number, good number and then a bad number. She's run back-to-back 90-plus buyers in stakes, including the Grade 3 Fritchie, where she was third behind Glass Ceiling. I don't know. I mean, Miss Leslie's the class, but sentimentally speaking, I'm going to try Fee d'Esprit that race. Go back and look at the video. Visually impressive.
I totally agree, and I'm glad you mentioned it because it's always fun to see horses like this. That was a very, very clever claim back in August of 2020 and subsequently has put $150,000 or so in the bank since then. So again, always fun to watch those types. And then finally, kind of highlighting the day, the Tessio, $125,000 up for grabs, a mile and an eighth. And I love this. It's not win and you're in. It's win today. See you in May, as the winner will get a berth in the Preakness if they choose to accept it. I pulled up the private terms from March 19th. The winner is going to be number 8, Shake 'Em Loose. Running second will be number 7, Joe. They're both back in on Saturday afternoon. Vine Jet looks interesting off a couple of wins most recently at Parks. And intriguing that Bill Mott sends South Street to Laurel to take a part in the Tessio. What are your thoughts?
I think a very interesting race. Joe's going to get a lot of play, beaten favorite behind Shake 'Em Loose last time out. I'll tell you what, I mean, these two races, the last race we just talked about there, a previous race in the Heavenly Cause, in this race goes to show you got to take your chances with claims and stakes, right? look at Shake 'Em Loose. T2 was a $16,000 claim. He's come back to win three out of his last four. He had a very legit excuse, though, 27-1, again, in the spectacular bid here back in January behind an extremely sharp horse named Witty. He probably wasn't going to beat him that day anyway, but he was unprepared for the break at that time. I think they're going to try to use some tactical speed with him today and maybe try to go right to the front. That's just the, I know he's come from off the pace going the one-turn mile, and he's come from slightly off of it, but he put Charlie Marquez right into the race, or Charlie put him into the race midway down the backstretch in the private terms when he beat Joe. He got the jump on Joe, and Joe last time out didn't put it all together in the stretch. To me, he looked a little, well, I don't want to say not focused, but he tended to maybe switch over toward his left lead and in upper stretch and mid stretch, and he had every chance to run down Shake 'Em Loose, and I think he's going to be in the same kind of position today in chasing Shake 'Em Loose. Don't know much about South Street. I mean, I'm taking your word for how good or bad he is or how he fits in the spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's just intriguing that Bill Mott elects to, you know, with a fairly lightly raced horse, only four starts, comes out of the maiden breaker, and you have to put some trust in a guy like Bill Mott, certainly.
Well, just to throw out another horse for you, Seth, how about the other Michael Trombetta? Mr. Jefferson beaten 21 lengths behind early voting in the Withers. I love the way he won here at Laurel back last year, early November. The number wasn't good, but I like the way he did it. He raced from off the pace. He had trouble in the race. And then he looked like the horse to me who wanted to go much longer. They ran him against Mo Donegal. I actually played him that day in the Remsen at 26-1. He ran okay, but really was far back, you know, beaten 10 lengths. And then a couple of bad races or poor running lines on the form and on sloppy and muddy tracks. He's coming back a bit of a fresh horse with some good works at Fairhill. He's the other Trombetta, and he's a price. I don't know. I might have to use him in the spot, at least underneath.
Yeah, now that you mentioned him, because that angle is always intriguing. The quote-unquote other half of an uncoupled entry will certainly be a longer price and a significantly longer price. I may take a look at Mr. Jefferson a little bit myself. Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I thought maybe, you know, like at this point they're all in the race, no scratches. I thought maybe that, you know, Trombie entered a couple and would keep Joe in and scratch the other, but we'll see. At this point, they're still in.
Yeah, very intriguing. Dave, as always, appreciate the thoughts. And as I say, it's always fun. The winter at Laurel has been a lot of fun. Now as we get into spring, we're looking at Preakness and whatnot with the Tessio and a nice stakes card this afternoon. So we appreciate the thoughts. We will talk again.
Okay, Seth. Have a good day.
Appreciate it. You too. Dave Rodman from Laurel Park. And a nice stakes day down there, highlighted again by that Tessio, which has win today and you're in May factor. As the winner will get a berth in the Preakness, again, if they choose to accept it. But you would think one or two potentially are going to come out of there and wind up being Preakness runners. So, Laurel, nice action. Nice action also at Keeneland. We talked about that earlier with Ellis Starr. We appreciate his visit as well. I mentioned on the handicapper support, I don't think I've mentioned so far here. We'll also want to, and this afternoon on OTB Live, I'm going to take a look at Keeneland, Aqueduct, and Oaklawn. But Oaklawn today, do I have the BP sitting in front of me. Let me just get race and race time, because it is the return of Jackie's Warrior down there in the Count Fleet. The Count Fleet will be race number 11 at Oaklawn. It'll go off at about 6:42 our time, so about 6:45 tonight. Jackie's Warrior back in action after having won the Eclipse Award last year for Steve Asmussen and company. So that's at Oaklawn today. We mentioned earlier this morning our friends at Woodbine back in action. And again, finally getting back to a more normal season after a couple of seasons that were kind of juggled up and late starts and whatnot the past couple of years with the pandemic situation, but they're getting into action up at Woodbine today for, again, kind of a more normal season. So good luck to everybody up in that direction. Certainly we will talk to the folks up at Woodbine as the weeks progress here. I'm going to wrap it up for Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Be back in an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. Plenty of action. Don't forget, Thoroughbreds available tonight here at Capital OTB TV and CapitalOTBBet.com. So keep that in mind. Today at the Clubhouse Racebook, there is a match bet promotion. So if you decide to come down and enjoy your afternoon with us at the Racebook, you can take advantage of that as well. 711 Central Avenue in Albany. And don't forget, if you're a patron at the Uncle Sam's Lanes branch in Troy, you can stop by today and take advantage of the Fan Appreciation Day, our chance to say thank you to you for your patronage. That's the Uncle Sam Lanes branch in Troy this afternoon, Fan Appreciation Day. Don't forget, tomorrow, Easter means no racing, no wagering available, no horse racing wagering available in New York. So we won't be around tomorrow, but just keep that in mind. Be back in action as the week progresses into Monday and beyond. But I will be here, and as I say, about an hour and a half or so for a Saturday afternoon OTB Live. Looking forward to it because I think there's some really nice racing this afternoon with the Keeneland Spring Meet, as I say, Jackie's Warrior at Oak Lawn. We'll take a look at some Aqueduct as well. So looking forward to it. Hopefully you are too. Hopefully you all cash some tickets. That's what it's all about. So wrapping it up for Racing Across America on a Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you later this afternoon.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.